Listen to shoot the defence. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Shoot the Defence on FNX, brought to you by My Sportswear and Save Association. I'm your host, Stel, and I'm joined by my co-host, Yannickis. How you doing?
My pleasure.
Yeah, very good, mate. Great to have you back.
Thank you very much.
It's been a whole week since we last seen each other face to face.
Have you missed me?
Like a hole in the head.
Cheers, mate. Yeah, excellent. Appreciate it.
Now, our guest this evening is a Millwall legend. He doesn't even need an introduction. It's Steve Morrison. Great to have you on the show, Steve. Thank you for joining us.
Good evening. You all right?
Yeah, absolutely fine, mate. It's great to have you on the show.
No problem. Look forward to it.
Fantastic. Well, Steve, before we actually talk about the show, talk about that goal at Wembley, mate, because I know we've got a lot of Millwall fans that will be tuning in for this one.
Obviously it sunk in, a couple of weeks after the goal went in, but no, it was... highlight of my career, a massive moment for the football club, and I've said it before. I said if you could write the script of how you'd want it to go, that's how you'd want it to go, isn't it? So it was perfect for me in the end, and we all got to where we wanted to get, and it was a really good day.
Mm. And now you're finding your first season back in the Championship.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. We've been doing really well. We've not got the results our performances have deserved, but we've definitely stepped it up a level. And as a squad, we're in a really healthy position at the minute. We've got a couple of tough away games coming up, Cardiff and Sheffield Wednesday. Our home form's been really, really good, and I think we're holding our own very, very well.
Mm, brilliant. Well, you know, there's a cliche where they say that the Championship is a very unforgiving league, which obviously it is, and it's a strain on a lot of players. Would you agree with that, or is it actually worse than what people make it out to be?
No, it's, for me, I've had the luxury of playing at all levels, and without a doubt, it's the hardest one. It's a real mixture. Obviously, you're playing the Premier League, you're playing top quality people week in, week out, and you have to try and find another way to beat them. And sometimes you just outwork them. Sometimes you get a bit of luck. Sometimes you're generally better than the players you're playing against. But 50% of the teams are just far and away better than you. Technically, their squads are better. They're better players. So it's kind of a real tough mix. But it's not as physically demanding as the Championship. You get. I remember playing in the Premier League with Norwich, and it was week to week. So you played on a Saturday, you had a whole week to recover. Then you played Saturday again. So it was very easy on the body. The Championship is Saturday, Tuesday. It has got a mixture of players that can play in the Premier League, players that are in that top spectrum of the Championship, and you've got players at the bottom. So you are coming up again all walks in the Championship, and it is physically and mentally the most demanding league that I've ever played in, and it's really, really tough, and you can see that's why the clubs that come down don't often go straight back up.
There aren't any kind of easy games in the Championship, are there, Steve?
No, you look at the games from the start of the season, Forest away, and then you play Norwich at home, Leeds at home, then you play Birmingham at home Saturday, and you've got Cardiff away, now you've got Sheffield Wednesday away, and then you look at the game on Saturday after, we've got Burton at home. The neutral will say, oh, that's an easy fixture for Millwall. Well, Burton have been in the league for 2 years. Mm. They won League One. We missed out on the playoffs the year they went up. Mm-hmm. They stayed up last year. They've got some good results this year. Mm. It is generally the league that anyone can beat anyone on their day.
I agree.
Fantastic. Well, great stuff. Thank you, Steve. That's a really good insight into the Championship. I know that next time we have someone talking about the Championship on the show, we'll tell them, well, look, Steve Morrison says otherwise. There you go. Okay, well, let's talk about the Premier League, shall we? And another dramatic weekend in the league saw no fewer than 32 goals, 12 of which came on Sunday as North London won the battle of the bragging rights over Merseyside in emphatic fashion. Arsenal battered Everton 5-2 at Goodison, while their best mate Spurs defeated Liverpool by the same margin, 4-1 at Wembley. Everton's humiliating defeat was the proverbial straw that broke the camel's back for the hierarchy, and Koeman was promptly sacked on Monday, which is a shame because Fran Alonso is actually a good friend of the show, and he's Koeman's assistant, or was Koeman's assistant. So I really hope he finds work in the very, very near future. This actually leads us nicely onto our bite back question, which is, have Everton made the right decision sacking Koeman, or have they pulled the trigger too soon? We had a lot of responses on our Facebook group page. I'm just going to go through them as quick as I possibly can. Ben Burnell says, I always say give a manager until at least Christmas, but the transfer activity was poor. They lose Lukaku and don't replace him. They go out to sign three number 10s. He's got a very good point there. Dan DeLuca from Sofa Sports News says, best for all parties. Koeman will recover. Too good not to. But the situation is untenable there. Squad is appalling, and the points they've lost, they've scraped. Someone needs to grind them through it, and Koeman is not that man, even though I rate him highly. Now, Jay says the number half-time subs is failure to let Sigurdsson, his top target, record signing, play in his favoured position. Strange team choices and a lack of playing style and direction all point to him having to walk. Simon Alavi, again from Sofa Sports News, says Lukaku was as big for them as Sanchez was. I think he meant Suarez, actually, for Liverpool. If their richer neighbours couldn't replace him, how can you expect Everton to do without adequate time? Now, Alexis, who's a very, very big Arsenal fan, and the fan of Koeman, says, shows sometimes money is not the answer. He had less at Southampton, and the team when he left was 10 times the team he had at Everton. Because he spent so much money on so many players, he felt he had to fit them in somehow. Team was majorly unbalanced, and he looked lost in his own mistakes, or too stubborn to find a different way. He had to go. Haminda says, I agree with what Ben has said. He should have been given until Christmas. I think they put all the eggs in one basket trying to sign Giroud from Arsenal, who decided to stay until the end. Also, why sign Sigurdsson and not play him in his best position? Marco Lima, our friend in Brazil, says, wow, this is a long one, Marco. I'm going to try and narrow this one down. He says, sometimes I feel there should be a rule that regardless of any mutual understanding and barring a health or family-related issue, no managerial contract can be terminated mid-season at any point. In order to successfully assess a manager's work, you need to have, at the very least, a comparable body of work and results upon which to make an assessment. Yes, Everton came, what, seventh last season? But too much has changed since then, both within the club and within rival clubs. It's a different competition each season, and the playground rules, in inverted commas, change. This isn't to say he is without blame, but being realistic about it, football leagues have never been about single competitions. I'll tell you what, he goes on to say a lot more, and you can see that on our Facebook site. And I'm going to read Pascal Chimbonda's one. He says, I don't think it's harsh. Koeman talks much about his own ambitions using his present club as a stepping stone. He says he would leave at the end of his contract, so this is not a man who was committed to building something. The club invested lots of money and were willing to sacrifice their golden boy, Barkley, for free. If he wasn't planning on staying beyond another year, don't waste any more time and money. He made a pig's meal out of the signings. So many midfielders, it seems like he bought the same player five times. It goes down to personality. His arrogance has probably cost him, as it seems everyone from the fans to players have had enough. Steve, what do you make of Koeman's sacking, and do you agree with the majority of the group page?
You never like to see a manager get sacked, especially so because it is still so early in the season. But I mean, you have to agree that you can't work out why he signed Sigurdsson, Rooney, Klaassen. They've already got Barkley there. It's just strange. You look at it, our time, Calvert-Lewin's a good young talent, but he's not ready to be playing week in, week out for a top 17 up front. And I'm a bit missed by why they haven't signed a number 9. And you can say, oh, he did try but couldn't, but I think he spent a lot of money in other areas, and somehow he hasn't managed to improve the team. And Lukaku's a massive miss, and maybe he thought he would bring goals from other areas to kind of cover that void. But for me, I just don't see a team out there. I see Pickford making save after save after save, week in, week out. I see Rooney scoring goals, trying hard, and I think he's been a good signing for him. But I just don't see a team. I see lots of players wanting to all play in the same position, want to do the same thing, and I just don't see a team. I don't see a team that that wants to win for their manager or are good enough to win for their manager. I think if you haven't got a team, I think that has to come down to the manager, and he's the one who needs to instill that team mentality and that togetherness, and I don't think he's done that.
What do you think?
He had to go.
Just like that?
Yeah, it's a ruthless business now. It's all about results, and the fact that you spend a lot of money to try and recruit the Lukaku money, and he didn't spend the Lukaku money well. I mean, he tried was it Sandro Ramirez from Malaga, and you know, that's not worked out. Rooney's not that type of striker like Lukaku is, and even his signings like Sigurdsson and Klaassen haven't worked out. I guess everyone needs time, and a lot of the arguments might be that yeah, maybe his team needed a little bit more time to bed into his ideas, and I can understand that. But a club like Everton being 18th in the Premiership and not doing anything in the Europa League as well, and struggling in the Premiership, there was only one outcome in the end.
Mm. The thing is, from my perspective, I think there's a lot more to it than meets the eye. I mean, when you look at the bigger picture, okay, we can take Lukaku out of the equation, and it's easy to say, you know, he's the main reason. You know, it's easy to say, but it's probably the truth. Because when you take out that many goals, how can you replace them? It's very difficult. Mm. And with a team like Everton, with the greatest respect, they're not a Man United or a Man City that can attract these huge names, these stellar players. But then when you look at the whole team in general, let's just break it down a bit. Look at his tactics. He will either play a 4-2-3-1 or maybe or go 3-5-2 or 3-4-2-1. He's always going to have a one man up top for the majority of the time anyway. To play that position, now Steve, maybe you disagree with me on this one, but to be that one man up top, you can't have a low center of gravity. You can't be nimble. You've got to be big, strong, physical, and mobile. Exactly. That's the way I see it. You've seen the past.
It's a difficult one because you say that and look at Man City.
Mm.
Their one up top is Jesus or Aguero.
Mm-hmm.
Both small, but they play a brand of football which allows them to have that kind of striker. For me, I think people don't understand the importance of having a team ethic and a team together. Like, you've got 11 players, 11v11, right? So regardless of who's out there, you still have to want to win. You still have to want to win for your manager. You still have to want to win for your teammates. And you just don't see it. Yeah, I know the guy got sent off at the weekend, and up until that point, they was in the game, to be fair. But they just crumbled. After that, they just crumbled. They just went away and they crumbled. And for me, as soon as you see that happen, you've got to start questioning the team mentality. And I don't know. I just don't. I said that you watched them talk about it on Match of the Day and stuff like that. Like, what is their game plan? And I think it's a case of, I don't like to say they've lost the dressing room, because I think that's a load of rubbish I'm saying. But I just think that he kind of knew the writing was on the wall. And as you said, he signed a load of players that are exactly the same, and he hasn't replaced Lukaku. But I just don't see where they was ever going to go. I just think week after week they might pick up a result every now and then, but I just think it was a downward spiral, and they needed to I think they needed to change, and hopefully someone can come in and give them a bit of fresh impetus and get them a new way of playing. Because man for man, they're not as good as other teams. Just to go out there and just play, they need a set game plan.
Mm. I mean, no doubt there's going to be a new manager bounce. But when you look at that squad, okay, fair enough. I know Seamus Coleman has had that pretty serious injury. They haven't really filled that void, have they? Leighton Baines is another year old, and as good as Leighton Baines has been for Everton, he can't go on forever. He's a fullback. He can't keep marauding up and down that flank. How old is he now? 31? 31, 32? I mean, listen, I know that players are much fitter these days, but it's the Premier League, and it's the physicality, the demands. And again, he's done very well for Everton. He's been a fantastic servant for him. But it seems that when he's not, you know, creating opportunities, Everton aren't getting goals. You know, as Pascal said, Barkley, another player that is Everton born and bred, but he wants out. So what does that tell you about...
Even Morales as well.
Yeah, he shunned him, hasn't he?
Yeah. Completely.
He, you know, he was quite reliable for them.
Even someone like Nias, to be fair. Last year, didn't have a squad number. He didn't want to know. He's like, he's not going to play for me. And then this year, all of a sudden, he's back in the fold, which again shows...
But even then, he won't play him. who's giving him substitute appearances. Yeah. But he's got to be their top goal scorer.
That's right. Yeah, I agree. But it just shows how just desperate.
Just play him up front.
Yep.
And he's got the other players. Someone's going to have to be left out. That's football.
Yep.
He doesn't have to play Rooney, Sigurdsson every week, and Klaassen or whatever. Just play. I think he's thought to himself, do you know what? I've spent this on these players, and all of these players have to play. And as you said, he had half the budget he had at Southampton. But I think if you looked at a Southampton team back then, I think he had a much better team.
Mm-hmm. Is it a bit unfair to Lane's team in the sense that, you know, they played City, they played United, they played Spurs, who else they played
Arsenal?
They
went against City.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, away from home. Yeah.
They drew 1-0, that's right.
That's right. So perhaps do you think he'd still be in a job if the fixture list was, nicer to him?
I think he would have been out of it quicker if he hadn't have had this much success, because I think the teams he's had, effectively, you're expected to lose those games.
Yeah.
But I think it's the manner. It's the manner of the losses. And I think the European games haven't helped him at all, because they've gone out there and they've lost poorly. And I think the way it all kicked off in Lyon the other night, I think that just showed pure frustration from everyone.
Mm. I agree. So, yeah, who do you think is going to replace him then? Anyone in mind, do you reckon?
Mancini?
I think Sean Dyche is in the running.
Sean Dyche, yeah. Yeah, I was about to say that. I know Mancini's doing very well in St. Petersburg at the moment, the top of the league.
Yeah.
I don't think he'd want to leave. But there's another guy that they mentioned who...
Amsworth?
There's another guy. I'm not going to say his name.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. Yeah. Is it the ex-Dortmund manager?
No. He used to play for United. Not going to say his name. So yeah, they've been talking about him. I don't see what that would
have. Yeah,
yeah,
I agree.
I don't know how that would benefit.
I think Sean Dyche, for him, as well as he's done at Burnley, I think there's only so far you can take Burnley, because I think the club and the stadium, etc., only allows you to go so far. But you can see what he's done there with basically a team ethic. It's all about the team. It's all about working for the team. And if that's something that the Everton hierarchy feel like they're missing, in the Premier League, there's only one guy who has proved that he can do it year on year, and that's him. And I think for a fit, it'd be absolutely perfect. And I said there's players that he knows as well, like Keane and stuff like that. And I'm sure we'll be able to attract some players that he's worked with as well. So I think it's a really good fit.
Mm. Mm. It definitely brings some fire back into that team, though, wouldn't he? Sean Dyche, doesn't he?
Yeah,
you know, he's actually tactically better than what people give him credit for.
I quite like him. He's got a lot of passion and he sets his teams out really well. I mean, he's at Burnley, for goodness sake, and the job that he does, I think he's a good manager. I think he deserves the opportunity as well.
It's not by accident they do what they do week in, week out.
Correct.
It might not be pretty on the eye or whatever people want to call it, but football is, as we've said already, is a result within this.
Yep.
And he gets results. And he gets results with a team, effectively, should be in the bottom three, bottom four of the Premier League, going on crowds and stands and budget, etc., etc. But every year he achieves more than what he should, and it ain't by accident.
Not at all. Exactly.
I agree.
You know, the signings that he's made this summer, I mean, they lost Michael Keane, and it's almost as if, you know, they haven't missed him at all. You know,
look at Chris Wood as well.
Yeah, he's been fantastic.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
He took a chance of playing the Championship, spent a bit of money on him, and he's done well for him, and he just shows,
Jonathan Walters as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's injured at the moment.
It's very, very shrewd
that's
signing.
Shrewd business.
There you go. Well, let's continue with Everton. I know they were like a deer in headlights for most of the game against Arsenal. I mean, Arsenal didn't look like losing even when they went a goal behind, did they?
I don't know.
Go on.
Arsenal are not the team that they used to be either, to be fair. So this was one of them kind of silly games to start off with. Everton a goal up with Rooney again against Arsenal. How many goals has he scored in his career against Arsenal?
He'll score against Arsenal at his funeral, won't he?
Yeah, probably, yeah. I mean, I've lost count how many times he scored against Arsenal. But like Steve was saying, Everton were in the game for most of the game. Arsenal, had the better quality and had the chances. And topsy-turvy game a little bit for me. But once Arsenal got themselves in front, and then with Everton's kind of confidence being shattered, there was only one winner after, and the sending off as well just killed the contest, to be fair, after that.
That's right. Well, Steve, I mean, we've spoken obviously about how the loss of Lukaku has affected Everton at great length, but they've been a mess tactically and technically this season. So we know this now. The players can't hide behind Koeman's failings anymore, can they? It's put up or shut up.
No, obviously it'll be interesting. I said, what normally happens when a new manager comes in? Do you know what I mean? If I was a betting man, I'd be betting on Everton to win if they have a new manager by the weekend, because 9 times out of 10, you win your first game, you charge for your new manager because everyone tries a little bit harder, which is always disappointing to actually see, because it makes you think, right, John, you find your manager under the bus there a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously it's going to be interesting. See who comes in. I think Huddersfield's in charge, isn't he, for the weekend?
That's right, yep.
So they brought an old boy back in who knows the club, and I presume he'll be trying to get a positive result of the weekend. So yeah, I just, as I said, I don't think it's right there. I just think it's a little bit uneasy at the football club, and as I said, the manager's taken the brunt of that. He's now gone. So as you said, it's put up or shut up now, and we'll have to see what kind of performance they're putting at the weekend.
Well, apparently, still, the talk at Everton is that they want Unsworth to become the manager.
Wow, okay.
Apparently, the players want him as the new manager, so...
Okay,
that'll be interesting, won't it?
Yeah. Well, let's hope that if he does get the job, he'll do well, because we saw what happened with Craig Shakespeare at Everton. Leicester. They wanted him. He came in, he did a job for half a season, and he had half of this season. Now he's gone. So, yeah, didn't even get a year, did he?
No, not really.
Yeah, there you go. Well, Steve, Arsenal, they didn't seem to break a sweat, and Ozil was in top form. A lot of people are saying that he's been putting himself in the shop window because of this game, like a lot of sceptics. Do you agree with them?
Personally, I'm not having Ozil. I don't. I watch a lot of football. I watch. I've been lucky to see Arsenal a couple of times when I've been at Wembley, and I just don't see it. I see a very good technical player with bags and bags of quality, but I don't see a player who works for his team or who works hard. I see him as a bit of a luxury player, and he's good in a team like Arsenal at times, but when they're under the cosh, like they have been at times, he always seems to be the scapegoat, and I think rightly so, because he's the one who doesn't put the shift in, he doesn't run around. I said, like Sanchez, you can't argue with his work rate, you can't argue with the other side of the game that he does, but do you know what I mean? I think Ozil scored a good goal. I think he's a very good header. People don't give him the credit for the header at the weekend, but the ball from Sanchez, and I don't know, I'm just not, me personally, he's not for me. I'm not a massive fan of his, but he had a good performance on Saturday, but I think the majority of the Arsenal team did once Everton went down to 10 men, because one team you don't want to give time and space to is Arsenal.
Mm-hmm. Smell blood, didn't they?
Yep.
And mate, another manager who's feeling a bit of pressure is Jurgen Klopp. He told the press pack at full time, whatever you say about us today in a negative way, you are right. Now, were you surprised with how Liverpool folded on Sunday?
No.
Okay. But you were saying that Liverpool play their best football against the big clubs.
Yeah. But defensively, they're a shambles.
Right.
I'm sorry. If you attack Liverpool, if you know, we said this last week about United and Liverpool. If you stop the front three, Liverpool are gettable at every single position, feeling, and that's what Tottenham went. They went for the kill. They, you know, Lovren and Matip at the back. For me, I don't understand. Listen, how can I say this? I'm not one for people putting pressure on managers, but it seems Klopp every week seems to get away with whatever he's doing. If they lose 5-0, it's not Klopp's fault. If they lose 4-1, it's not Klopp's fault. Whose fault is it then? If you were a Liverpool fan, it comes down to the manager. How can you not address the defensive frailties at Liverpool and not be your fault? Are you trying to say to me that Van Dijk was the only defender available in the summer for Liverpool to go and buy? So once they knew they couldn't buy him, what, there was nobody out there for Liverpool to sign a centre-half?
I think Liverpool have spent £12 million on defenders in the past 4 seasons. I think that's what I read somewhere today.
What, but they've gone by Chamberlain because they really needed another left-sided or midfield player where they've got about 50 in there. Something's not right there at Liverpool for me. that's my personal opinion. And I think he is feeling the pressure. And I think the Liverpool fans soon will start turning on him. I really do.
Some of them already are, mate. Believe it or not.
There you go.
Believe it or not. There you go. Well, Steve, nice and easy question for you, mate. How'd you stop Harry Kane?
The Harry Kane is, I've been lucky to play with him, and I've seen him firsthand, and he's, the one thing he can do is put the ball in the back of the net. He's added so much more to his game since I've played with him, and he's one heck of a player now. But I think what we need to realise is he's playing in a very, very good Spurs team as well, who give him the opportunity to score the goals he does. Saturday, you take that away because the defending from Liverpool was shambolic. Lovren for the first, but also Mignolet, like just down your line. But for him to score from there is still one heck of a goal. He might do it, but you've got a better chance of saving it. The second one, there's just no excuse for what Lovren did, and obviously he picked out a great pass for Son. And obviously his next goal, Kane, obviously came from obviously a bit of a pinball in the penalty box. So, no, the guy's fantastic at the minute. And when you're at that level that he's going to be at now for the rest of his career, you're going to see him score 30-plus goals a season because there's links to him going Real Madrid. I mean, the amount of chances he gets for Spurs, imagine how many he'll get for Real Madrid week in, week out. And he'd be up there scoring 40, 50 a season because the amount of chances you get if you're an out-and-out goal scorer, which say Ronaldo is now, he's going to score bundles of goals. And you can't stop that quality if you're going to give that quality time and space. And the team he plays in, give him those opportunities. And he's just... At a minute, he's on fire. It's a joy to watch as a forward, to watch him sticking the ball in the net week in, week out. But I think if you're Liverpool for the weekend, for example, you're thinking to yourself, watching that back Monday morning, thinking we could have stopped all of them goals.
Yeah. That's right. You know, the one thing I admire most about Harry Kane, it's not his ability, it's not his goal scoring, it's his attitude.
Yeah.
He reminds you of how Paul Scholes used to be, in the sense that, you know, he doesn't like being in front of the cameras all the time, kind of thing. He just goes in, gets the job done and leaves. You don't hear about him, you know, messing about. You don't hear about him in trouble, like in nightclubs, nothing. Yeah. He's a family guy. And that's to be honest, it's actually a breath of fresh air when you see like people like, he's like Dele Alli and Jesse Lingard and all these other guys dabbing on the TV and all that kind of stuff. It's refreshing to see, to be fair. Maybe it's just me being old-fashioned, I don't know.
No, 100%, 100% right, and that's why he will... for me, you look at Ronaldo, you look at Messi. Yeah, don't get me wrong, they've got massive, massive social profile. They're huge, right? Every single company in the world wants them associated with their company, with their brand. But they're not in, they don't put themselves in the limelight apart from what they do on the football pitch.
That's right.
But you don't see them out and about getting, as you said, don't see them getting out. But I know you've got the tax stuff and all that kind of stuff that's come out, but they haven't put themselves in that situation to get attention. That's something that's been put on them, by the people they're surrounded by. But you don't see them, as you said, don't see them out and about and getting in trouble and doing bad things. Yeah, you might see them at events, like you see Harry Kane at events, which is where they should be because they're getting recognised for what they've done, for what they've achieved. That's what I want to see. That's what I want to see when I pick up a paper or read something on the internet. I want to see them at events and at places. I hate picking up a paper on a Sunday morning and seeing a scandal because I think to myself, do you know what I mean? What are you doing? What are you doing? You're not doing it right. Look at the best. What are the best doing? And I think Harry Kane, it's not a case of is he going to get there? It's just a case of how soon he gets there.
Absolutely. Chelsea's 4-2 win over an impressive Watford side keeps them fourth place on goal difference, 9 points behind Man City, who thumped Burnley 3-0. Now, result of the weekend goes to Huddersfield Town after turning over Manchester United 2-1. Mate, what can you say about United's performance without swearing, of course?
Oh, damn.
Is that a cuss word? I don't know.
gutless, spineless, embarrassing, pathetic. I can go on all night, to be honest.
Don't.
I'm not. You can't go away to Huddersfield with an attitude like that. I mean, you know, before the game starts, you know it's going to be a passionate crowd. They haven't played United for how many years? The players are going to be out for it. Everyone's going to be out for it. It's going to be a battle. It's like what my coach used to say to me on a Sunday: win the battle and then you win the game. You know, but United didn't win the battle. Every single 50-50, Huddersfield, every decision went to Huddersfield. Huddersfield wanted it more. United looked like, oh yeah, we'll just turn up and win the game. And you can't do that at any level, let alone the Premiership, you know? Yeah, United made two horrendous mistakes that led to the goals, but it's part of football. Mistakes are going to be there. And I think what upset me most was probably the second half. The fact that, yeah, it was a slightly better United performance, but it wasn't the United of old where attack, attack, attack. They looked like they were going to get an equaliser. I didn't even think United were going to score the whole game, to be honest. That's how poor United were on the day. Mm. And, you know, you asked me this question about United's performances over the last weeks, and you've asked me if I was worried. I said, no, I'm worried now. Because I'm starting to see a pattern on the last three, four games where the football's no good, the attacking play is no good, and it might be a habit of producing these performances. Yeah, United won 2-0 away at Swansea tonight, but they made 8 changes. But it's worrying a little bit now, especially the performances.
Put it this way, I think if you cast your mind back to last week when we spoke about Troy Deeney, what he said about Arsenal.
Yeah.
You know, he saw Mertesacker, gave him a kick, and take it from there, right? Yeah. First 5 minutes, Anthony Martial gets a kick from a Huddersfield defender.
It didn't go back the whole game, did it?
What he did a little limp, then he kicked out at him, which was lucky to stay on the pitch.
Yep.
And then, as you said, didn't hear a peep out of him. You know, Herrera came out and he said to the media that United lacking passion and aggression, and it didn't please Mourinho one bit. I mean, I can understand Mourinho's frustration, because if Herrera is saying it, what about the rest of the team? What are they thinking?
Yeah.
Let's be honest, it was a garbage performance in United, and they should be doing a lot better. Let's not take anything away from Huddersfield, though, because they were well worth the win.
Absolutely.
I think they defended very well. They hit United on the counter-attack. In fact, they played the system that United tried to play against Liverpool, and it worked. But the difference is, United made defensive mistakes and Liverpool didn't.
I agree.
There you go. Steve, I know Chelsea bounced back from their shock defeat against Palace, with a very heartfelt victory against Watford. I know they were wasteful in front of goal. Did Conte's men get away with it?
Yeah, I think they did. I think they started very, very well in the game. I watched the game. They started well. They got their goal out of nothing. That's the welding. There was opportunities for Watford, and they nicked one just before the half time. I think sometimes in a game of football, that next goal that Watford got, it was the kick up the backside that kind of Chelsea needed. I think you saw their performance step up, and they've done well. And I think Morata didn't have the best of games, but it was nice to see Batshuayi come on, because he was actually getting a bit of stick when he came on. I think he gave the ball away a couple of times and got a bit of stick, and then he goes and scores a great header. I think it was nice, because I think it definitely looked like there was some kind of unrest in the camp, the way Conte had been celebrating goals and stuff like that, and then all of a sudden they come back with a result like that, and you saw everything change. The whole demeanour in the stadium changed. You saw Conte in the crowd celebrating the goal. So yeah, Watford have been very, very good. They've got a style of play which has been working for them. They've been playing very, very well. They've got some great results, but it was nice to see Chelsea react to going 2-1 down, because I think if they had lost that game in the manner that they did, in the manner that they was, I think people would have been asking some serious questions. But coming back and winning the game like they did was nice to see.
That's right. And what do you make of Watford this season, Steve? Have they impressed you?
Yeah, they've been good. We played them in a behind closed doors friendly, and the size of their squad and the ability that they've got is frightening. And we was 2-0 up in the game, and we lost 4-2 in the end. They've done very, very well. I think he's made some very, very good signings. I like the manager a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can see how he's been so successful elsewhere. And they won't be too disheartened with the result at the weekend. I think they've been very, very good. I think they'll dust themselves down. And I think they've got a very, very good manager and got a very, very good squad. So it'll be interesting to see if they can break into that top eight this year.
Going back to what Steve said about Marco Silva, if Everton, if he didn't join Watford at the start of the season, he would have been one of the names in the hat for Everton, 100% for me.
Yeah. He did very well, holding him.
Very well. Good manager.
There you go. Right, De Boer, Koeman and Shakespeare could be joined by Slaven Bilic and Mark Hughes soon after both West Ham and Stoke suffered embarrassing defeats. Now, Steve, if you just take your Millwall hat off for just a moment, mate, where do you think it's gone wrong for West Ham? I mean, let's be honest, surely this new stadium hasn't been that much of a factor.
It's a difficult one. The stadium, obviously, is massive for them. Big move. It's a great move, like, in terms of revenue, etc. But I don't know. I'm not one for it. I hope you can still a grass pitch with two white goals and white lines around it. So I don't think that's really sure. I just don't see a football team. I just don't see a team that want to. I don't know. I just see a lack of everything. Everything you'd want from a team, a solid Premier League team. You just don't see it. I just see individuals. I see. I just see a bad team. I just don't see a team that they don't fill you with. I don't think you ever think they're gonna win at the weekend. If they do, it's kind of like a bit of a shock. I think something has to change, and it seems like they're gonna stick with the manager to the end of the season, like they keep saying. But yeah, I suppose everyone will hide behind the stadium until they start winning games of football.
I think they're in the Everton mode.
Yeah,
exactly.
Downing tools, yeah.
Yeah, so and even Bilic's signings, exactly like Koeman's, they haven't worked out. Hernandez has not been as good as what I guess he should have been. Arnautovic has been a disaster. You know, I quite like Arnautovic. I think he's got a little bit about him. He's got a little bit of ability. So on his day, yeah, and that's right. And West Ham ain't even seen that day yet, have they? No. To be fair. I mean, he got sent off in his first game. There's something not right at West Ham either. And, you know, we touched on this. I think the owners with Bilic, I think he's one more result away of going. I think he's next, Bilic.
Yeah, they've really got Palace at the weekend. So
that's a massive game.
That could be it. That could be it, mate. I think so. So, Stoke are struggling right now as well. They got battered at Man City, which is no embarrassment, like, even though they let in seven. But losing to Bournemouth at home with little fight. Come on now, Hughes has got to be in trouble.
Are they playing Man United soon? Because you might get
a result. No, they drew two.
Yeah. You know, I think he is in trouble. Another one that spent money as well. They just seem to not move, Stoke, do they? They're just sitting that 10th, 11th.
They're down at the bottom now, aren't they?
Yeah, but as in generally like 10th, 11th, mid-table. And they don't seem to like go anywhere. It's just like they're still. I suppose for Stoke, it might be a good season finishing 10th, 11th. I just don't see any improvement. At all. Even he signed, Chipper Martin's come in, and, you know, he did well against United. He's gone missing ever since then. Mm. What have they done since that United result? Absolutely nothing. So he's in trouble. He's probably one or two results away of getting the chop. That's how the business is at the moment now. It's the Premiership with the money and everything, it's so demanding that you can't afford to go into a bad run because chairman's panic, the fans start panicking, they start getting on the players' backs. I think even at the weekend, they're booing every decision. That's where you know that maybe time's up and Hughes is in trouble big time.
That's right.
I think you've got to ask the thing is, for me, who are these teams going to bring in? Who are they going to bring in? What manager are they going to bring in? So Everton possibly going to bring in like a Dyche or someone from within. I mean, you look at West Ham, you look at Stoke, and you think, who's going to come in and make them better?
Sam Allardyce.
Are they going to make West Ham better? Are they going to make Stoke better? Or are they just going to make them defensively better? Or what? Is he still the same players? You can't do anything. With the way the football's changed now, you can't do anything till January. Then after that, you can't do anything to the end of the season. So
it depends on the style, Steve, as well. It depends on what kind of manager they're looking to bring in, what kind of star they want to play. I mean,
got rid of Pulis because they didn't want the star.
That's right.
They wanted
somebody more expensive.
To the star, which they have done. Apparently, going to watch Stoke now is not what it used to be.
Yeah.
But they have one result against Man United. And then they've had poor results. West Ham, they have a good result, and then they have four or five poor results. And then they have the one good result, and they have four or five poor results. It's just, you go and get a manager, go and get Sam Allard, go and get Mancini, go and get whoever you want to get, and put them into West Ham tomorrow. Are West Ham going to be any better?
It's a tough one, isn't it?
It's a tough one.
It's a tough one.
Again, it comes down to confidence of the players as well. Sometimes you need the lift as a football player, or as a human being in general. Maybe somebody coming in, you know, putting your arm around the player and going, listen, you're better than what you're producing. I want you to go and show everybody how good you are.
Yeah.
Sometimes that lift, that new face, that new presence in the dressing room can lift players.
Yeah.
I just think it's dire at West Ham. And I don't think it's as bad as at Stoke, but at West Ham, definitely, they need the change there, 100%. I think the players have stopped playing for Bilic.
Yeah, I think they're gonna look at bringing someone experienced. I don't think they're gonna. Let's be honest. I mean, Bilic managed at international level for a while, didn't he?
Yeah.
Did he do much at club level? I'm not sure.
He was at Besiktas, wasn't he?
Was he?
Yeah.
So I mean, he had the Champions League experience. But then again, you look at people like, I don't know, Jaap Stam. He's a possibility. He's done relatively well at Reading. I know Uwe Rosler is doing all right at Fleetwood at the moment. Mm. But are they going to look into managers like these guys? I really don't know. I really, really don't know. It'll be a very interesting one, to say the least. Gus Poyet might even be in the frame. You never know. Then his son used to play for West Ham.
Diego Poyet,
yeah. Anyway, in other news, Sami Khedira was the unlikely hero for Juve, scoring a hat-trick in their 6-2 win at Udinese. Meanwhile, in Ligue 1, Neymar was sent off in PSG's 2-2 draw against Marseille. Now, incidentally, Edinson Cavani scored a 93rd-minute free kick to level it up. So, Khedira, he's gone under the radar a bit since leaving Real Madrid for Juve. Is he one of the most underrated midfielders in the game?
I think so. I think he's a good player, Khedira. I think everywhere he's gone, he's done a good job. He's not like the marquee name or the marquee signing, but it doesn't affect the job everywhere he goes. And for a player who's predominantly a defensive midfield player, he scores goals. I mean, he scored 3 goals with Juve out of 10 men on Saturday, so shows his ability. Now, I think he's a cracky little... well, he's not a little player, but he's a...
You can talk. Player.
Yeah, I know. Jeez,
4 foot
talking
nothing,
about,
you.
Yeah, talking about myself, yeah. But no, he's definitely underrated and definitely does a good job. He sits in front of that back four. And he can play as well. He can pass the ball. He can pass all the ball and his distribution's good. So, no, I rate Khedira. I think he's a good player.
Steve, we saw a few weeks ago Cavani and Neymar fighting over who was going to take a penalty. Do you think they're going to fight over take free kicks next?
I don't know. I think it's all a bit pathetic, isn't it, at times. I think it's... look, Neymar's gone there to be the most expensive player in the world, and I think he's been in the shadows of Messi for a long time at Barcelona, and he's trying to stamp his authority on the PSG. And yeah, obviously getting sent off at the weekend, and then Cavani stepping up and scoring a free kick will maybe cause a little bit more of a rift in the dressing room. But that's down to the manager to sort out. He's got some fantastic talent there. He's got some big players, and. Yeah, he needs to find some kind of cohesion between the lot, because so let's get it right. They're in a league which they're going to romp. They're going to score bags of goals week in, week out. Obviously they need to find some kind of middle ground somewhere. And I don't know, maybe if Neymar gets free kicks, Cavani gets the penalties or something. I don't know, but obviously it's a game they should have been winning, and. Obviously, they'll be disappointed they haven't, and Neymar getting sent off is frustrating. But so they've got so many good players, and someone like Cavani stepped up and put a free kick in the 94 minutes, just shows how good they are.
Steve, would you fight Gregory for a penalty?
I wouldn't fight him. Greg's is the penalty taker. He missed one last week, and I'll always step up and take a penalty, and I will ask if we get a penalty on Saturday, and I'm on the field, he is, and I will ask him, do you want it? And if he says, yeah, he's confident he wants it, then I'm happy to back it. If he doesn't, then I'll take it. So I never have an argument over it.
Does that come from Neil Harris, though, Steve? Like, before you go out onto the pitch, is Gregory like your main man for pens, and then, or do you kind of sort it out on the pitch yourselves?
No, well, it comes from the manager lets us deal with it. He kind of I remember when I played with Neil, he was the penalty taker. And all of a sudden, one game, we got a penalty. He got the ball. And I remember what, I think he missed a penalty the week before. And he picked the ball up. I walked towards him and said, "You're having it." And he went, "No, you have it." And he gave me the ball. And I took the penalty. And I ended up being the penalty taker for the next season and a half. Greg's has been the penalty taker ever since I've been here. When he's not been on the pitch, I've taken the penalties. When I've not been on the pitch and he's not been on the pitch, Sean Williams has taken penalties. But obviously, it's just how you feel in the game. If someone, if Greg's is having a shocker of a game and he gets a penalty, then I'll say to him, "Look, do you think I should have it or do you think someone else should have it?" But we just sort it out. You know what I mean, we're grown up enough to sort that out. Sorry. I'd never go, "Give me the ball, you're not having it." And have an argument. I think you need to be more grown up than that. And as I said, I think the name Mark Cavani situation, considering it's in such a worldwide stage, is pretty pathetic.
Yes, I agree. Well, former AC Milan players Kaká Kaladze and George Weah have taken a leaf out of Silvio Berlusconi's book and gone the political route. No, not the Banga Banga parties. Kaladze has been elected mayor of Georgia's capital, Tbilisi, while Weah is running for president of Liberia. Steve, you're a Millwall legend, mate. Any plans to go for the mayor of London job at any point, or at least head of Southwark Council? What's your opinion on ex-pros going to politics?
It's too corrupt, all that world, isn't it? It's not what you know, it's who you know. No, it's not my cup of tea. I'll stick to being involved at football, by hook or by crook. It's the thing I love, and it's the thing that I know best. So I think I'll steer clear of that. I'll leave George Weah and that kind of thing.
Well, you know what, to be honest, I'm not going to name any names or name any local authorities, but one of them is actually paying $100,000 more than what the Prime Minister's on a yearly basis.
Really?
Yeah, which is ridiculous. Crazy. Yeah, head of that council is getting $250,000 a year. Yeah, which is more than what what's her name is? Thatcher V2, allegedly. Finally, let's end this one on a funny note, I guess. Giovanni Liberti of non-league side Turris in Italy has been banned for 5 matches for, and I quote the Serie D disciplinary body, urinating in the direction of away supporters and making obscene and vulgar gestures while showing his genital organ. Now, another Serie D player was banned for 5 matches, same hearing, for kicking, punching and slapping the opposing team's masseur. What do you make of that, Steve? I'm sure you've seen things in the past, but nothing like that.
No, I said, I think you, I think sometimes you think you've heard it all. and then you hear things like that, and you think to yourself, "Look, seriously, what kind of animal does something like that?" Do you know what I mean? You've got to be some kind of, you've got to be some kind of person to be doing something like that. And hopefully I never get to, see it in my lifetime, on a football pitch, but, I'm not surprised it's happened in Serie A, whatever it is, in Italy, because they're crazy cats.
But let's be honest, I doubt that this player would ever do that at the Den, would he?
No, I don't think he'd be allowed. I think the fans will have him in with them very quickly.
Set Danny Baker onto him, I guess.
Yeah.
What about you? You played in Cyprus, the Neanderthals out there. Like, we can say that because we're from out there. It's okay, people don't get offended. They
often be just as a provocation. I haven't seen anyone urinate at fans, to be honest. I'm always someone like, "Come on then," to try and give it and then start a riot. But I'll tell you what I did see, but I don't know, probably most people did. It's totally irrelevant. Did you see the Thailand penalty shootout?
Yeah,
I thought that was brilliant.
That's incredible. What was it, 19-20 at the time?
Something like that,
19-18
or something.
The best thing about it was how devastated the goalie was. Yeah.
That's right.
And it's
been lost. I mean, can you imagine that?
It's hit the bar, it's gone to celebrate.
Yeah, you've struck a penalty, it's hit the bar, it's come out, the goalkeeper's gone to celebrate, and then he's just standing minding his own business, he just rolls in.
Brilliant.
The trajectory of that ball. But it wasn't one of those Adidas balls or the new Nike balls. Right, well, that's us for this edition. Hope you guys enjoyed it. I'd just like to say a big thanks to Steve for agreeing to come on the show. Really appreciate your time, mate.
No worries.
Are you on any form of social media or any way?
No, only LinkedIn. Well, I spoke to you.
Okay, no problem. No problem. Well, if you guys want to get in touch with Steve, I advise you to get a professional LinkedIn profile because he's not going to message just anyone. connect with him because, as you can tell, Steve is a very eloquent guy. He knows his football, and it's been an absolute pleasure having you on. Thank you very much, Steve.
Still scoring goals as well.
Still scoring goals, yeah. Jan, do you want to give our listeners your Twitter address?
YannickSJ.
Excellent. We're at Shoot Defence. Guys, if you're still listening and you haven't pressed stop, please feel free to visit Amazon and buy Paul Stewart's book, Damage. I implore you to get this book because Paul is a very good friend of the show. His book is a fantastic read. He's been through a lot in the past. So, yeah, please feel free to buy the book. It's an absolute fantastic read. Steve seems to have been cut off. He'll be back sometime soon, I hope, and so will we. Now, for those of you still listening on the download, what you're about to hear is episode 2 of Blast from the Past with Sid Lambert. This edition, we discuss the Arsenal versus Everton game of season 92-93. Enjoy. Hello and welcome to another edition of Blast from the Past on Shoot the Defence. I'm your host, Stel, and I'm joined once again by Sid Lambert. How you doing, mate?
Well, it's been 3 days since West Ham's capitulation against Brighton, Stel, so I've just about recovered, but there's a League Cup game with Spurs coming at the Wednesday, so it won't last for long.
You think that's when the guillotine's going to drop on Savan Bilic, yeah?
I think we'll probably wait until we lose a horrible game of football 1-0 to Crystal Palace at the weekend.
Wow.
And by then we'll have no other choice. I don't think he's got long left.
Seems like it, doesn't it? Doesn't it? All right, well, let's discuss the game that you've picked. Would you like to tell our listeners the actual result and the teams that are involved?
Oh, well, indeed. Well, yesterday we had a classic between Arsenal and Everton, a 7-goal thriller, unless you're an Everton fan. And bizarrely, almost 25 years to the day, in the 92-93 season, the two teams met in the reverse fixture at Highbury.
Yeah.
I'll talk you through a little bit about the context around the game and where the two teams were going. Of course, the first thing to remember still is that Arsenal, Everton were part of what the press called the Big Five. That was Arsenal, Everton, Manchester United, Tottenham and Liverpool, who actually pushed to get the Premier League breakaway because they were unhappy with the TV deal.
Mm-hmm.
So they were two big teams, a lot of history. They had a lot of power in English football, but by 92-93, the start of the Premier League season, the first Premier League season, they were two teams going in very different directions. I'll start with Arsenal, because there's some interesting stuff around them. They won the league in 91-92, boring everyone to tears with their 1-0 wins and the boring Arsenal chants. But their title defence, the season that Leeds won, they'd become free-scoring entertainers, which I couldn't remember. But they'd actually scored the most goals in the first division. Alan Smith, Ian Wright, Kevin Campbell, Paul Merson all scored double figures that.
Really? Yeah. I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah, it's incredible. Absolutely incredible. But of course, we know two things about George Graham. He likes a brown envelope.
Whoop.
And he likes a clean sheet. Yeah. So he made some changes to Arsenal to just make them that little bit leaner and meaner. He didn't want to entertain. He wanted to win the title in the first league, first season of the Premier League.
Yeah.
Now, there were two great transfers. One was a transfer out of Highbury, which I'm sure you'll remember, and that was David Rocastle to Leeds. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I remember, and I'll be interested to hear you as a United fan, because of course he scored a wonderful goal against Manchester United in his career.
That's right.
I remember being absolutely stunned because David Rocastle, he had a bit of everything, didn't he? He had skill in tight areas, he had a burst of pace, he was up and down the flank, he scored some brilliant goals, and he was just a bit unlucky to be born in the same era when we had John Barnes and Chrissy Waddle. Otherwise, he'd have got more than the 14 England caps. I thought he was a tremendous player. What did you think of him as a United fan?
Yeah, you know what? He was one of those unsung heroes, wasn't he? Didn't get the recognition he deserved. But that goal against United, where he just dribbled past everyone, you know, and then he chipped the goalkeeper from about 35 yards, was absolutely fantastic. I haven't seen a better goal at Old Trafford like that since, really. I can't from an away team anyway. But he was a fantastic footballer. And I remember a lot of Arsenal fans were very disappointed when he left the club. And it was a bit of a strange one to get rid of him, because he wasn't getting old, was he? Did he have injuries at the time? I can't remember.
No, and that's what I mean. It was highly controversial because he just played 35 games of the season for Arsenal. Mm. He'd had a couple of years dotted around where he'd only played kind of 15, 16, 17 games. And there were concerns that he was injury prone. But he just had his best season in years.
Mm.
Arsenal had been free scoring, but George Graham just decided he needed to tighten up. There wasn't enough space when you've got Paul Merson and his Limpar, and you've got that front three of Smith, Wright and Campbell. Somebody had to go, and it was the fan favourite David Rowcastle. But yeah. Of course, the really interesting thing was who they replaced him with. Probably, at the time, the most famous moustache in world football, and certainly the most famous Danish player in world football after his efforts at Euro 92. You know who I'm talking about, don't you, Stel?
Yep, John Fax Jensen.
Fax, what a great nickname. Now, is it true, am I remembering this rightly, that you are one of about 30,000 people who saw John Jensen's goal?
That's right. It was against Queen's Park Rangers. My cousin had tickets for that game. And he said, do you want to go to Highbury? I was like, okay, well, I've got nothing else to do. I was what, 11 years old back then? And he took me in. And I think Arsenal was 3-0 down at the time. And he scored, and he reeled off in celebration as if he scored again in the European Championships. But, it was a good strike, to be fair. Good strike.
Yeah, and of course, the interesting thing was that back then, there was no internet, was there? And you couldn't just put 302 into CFAX and get John Jensen's career history.
Yep.
So you kind of went on what you saw.
That's right.
And to English football fans, what they saw was John Jensen scoring an absolute screamer to beat Germany in the European final.
Yep.
Now, little did they know that he tried that 10,000 times in his career and never even come close. But this was the 92-93 side, Arsenal against Everton, Seaman, Dixon, Winterburn, Bold, Adams, midfield, which is pretty much the standard bearer for Industrious, John Jensen and David Hillier, Paul Merson behind a front three of Alan Smith, Kevin Campbell and Ian Wright.
Yep, that's right.
So, Everton, on the other hand, they were a team which you'd probably say politely were in transition. I mean, Ronald Koeman thought he had problems at the weekend. And whoever's going to take that job is going to have problems. But goodness me, they were a mess by now. They'd won the title in the mid-80s. They'd had success in Europe, but the good players had either left or they'd got old and they hadn't been replaced. So by this time, they were really mired in mid-table mediocrity. Although, of course, they started the first season of the Premier League unbeaten in 5 games, and they absolutely murdered you lot.
That's right. Effort,
didn't they?
That's right. We spoke about that last week. They gave us a good hiding, didn't they?
Yeah, they were brilliant. Those first 5 games of the season, the Everton fans thought that maybe, you know, the worm had turned and that the good times were coming back to Goodison. But they had a rotten September where they lost 5 out of 6, scored 1 goal and conceded 10, and they were back down banging trouble. And this was the Everton team for this game. And there's some good names in here, still. You'll like this. Neville Southall, Ian Snowden, Andy Hinchcliffe, Dave Watson, Martin Keown, Gary Ablett, Barry Horn, Robert Varshika, Peter Beagrie, Peter Beardsley and Tony Cotty. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I remember, like I said last week, I remember Robert Varshika because his brother played for Panathinaikos in Greece. But yeah, Andy Hinchcliffe, that cultured left foot, as they say about left footed footballers. Yeah, he had a fantastic left foot, didn't he? With free kicks and corners and whatnot. Peter Beagrie, only famous for a few somersaults, really. And then you had Peter Beardsley, who I was really surprised that Liverpool got rid of, and Tony Cotty, who, as you know, was a bit of a goal machine back then.
Yeah, it's really strange. When you look at that first 11, there's some real quality. Mm. I mean, Neville Southall as well was probably one of the best goalkeepers in the world at that stage. Even then, I remember he had a couple of games for Wales. I think they he basically put on a one-man show against Holland 1 year, and Ruud Gullit said he was the best keeper he'd ever played.
Mm.
But he was still really inconsistent. Like you said, Andy Hinchcliffe had a magic wand of a left foot. Dave Watson, Martin Keown, that's a pretty solid centre-half.
Well, even Gary Ablett was half-decent back then, isn't he? Steady Eddie.
Yeah, he was. You know, maybe the midfield, Barry Horn, you know, he had good days and bad days, but he certainly didn't want for effort.
Mm.
But for whatever reason, they were just incredibly inconsistent.
Yeah.
Peter Beagrie was capable of moments of magic and then long spells of near total anonymity. And Bob the Pole, as Evertonians called him, well, he was mercurial,
mm.
but always good fun. And when Everton clicked, they were a match for anybody.
Yeah.
When they didn't, they were absolutely rotten.
Yeah, but Sid, did you see the goalkeepers that were on the bench? There were two goalkeepers that never really got a game. There was Alan Miller, Arsenal, and Jason Kearton, the Australian, for Everton.
Yeah, Alan Miller was there a long time without playing a game of football.
Mate, he was there for like 6 years, and he won two league titles. he was Lukic's understudy, and then he was Seaman's understudy. He won two league titles.
And you had to feel for Jason Kearton, because I can't remember Neville Southall ever getting injured in about 20 years of playing football. I just don't remember him having a spell out through injury. He was absolutely ever present, and that's why he's an Everton legend.
Yeah.
But the game itself, you've seen the goals. What are your reflections on it?
The first one was vintage Arsenal. And by that, I mean the corner was from Merson. He aimed near post. Steve Bold looked to flick it on, as they always used to do. Near post flick on from Steve Bold. But this time it was cleared. And it came back out to Merson. He's played a peach in the box. And there was Ian Wright. Right place, right time, as always. It was a fantastic headed finish. Southall had no chance with that.
And I was trying to rack my brains about this, because we've all got, those of us that watched 90s football, we can all remember brilliant goals from Ian Wright. You know, twists and turns, chipping keepers, rounding keepers, ball hits a post, Wright gets a tap in, running through one-on-ones. I can't remember Ian Wright ever scoring with a header. It was genuinely one of the first times I can remember him getting his bonce on the ball and putting it in the net.
No, I agree. Because, like you said, he was one of these players where he'd get the ball left foot, right foot. He was always at the right place at the right time. You know, he'd score fantastic goals. He'd score tap ins. But yeah, in terms of headers, I can't really think of any other apart from that one. Really, off the top of my head, I mean, it'll take a YouTube compilation to find out how many of those 185 goals he scored with his head. But yeah.
And I, when I watched back the goal, I thought to myself, how has a team which has got Dave Watson, Martin Keown and Gary Ablett left Ian Wright unmarked in the box?
Yeah.
Absolutely unbelievable. So yeah, Arsenal go 1-0 in front. They're all over Everton. Everton are a shambles. It's one of those days where they just haven't turned up. Second goal, absolutely brilliant. And it was, for me, vintage Anders Lindpaar, wasn't it? A twist and a turn, a run, and then he drilled it home from outside the box, and Arsenal won 2-0. I had a lot of time for Anders Lindpaar, and of course he went on to do very well at Everton. What do you remember about him?
He was actually one of my favourite players back then.
Really?
Yeah, he was one of my favourite. I had the thing for wingers. I don't know why. I just liked the winger, you know. I thought it was a fantastic footballer. Again, he was reliable. He was entertaining. I was quite disappointed that he left to go to Everton, because he didn't seem to hit the heights as well as he did at Arsenal. I remember the goal that he scored against us in the game that in fact was the 21 man riot, or the brawl. You know, he scored the goal from practically the corner flag, beat Les Sealy at his near post. The scenes behind the goal from the away fans were nothing I've seen at Old Trafford for a long time. But yeah, no, he was a fantastic footballer. As you said, you know, he was pacey, he was skillful, you know, weaved around the defender, fantastic finish. He almost had everything for a midfielder.
Yeah, I think he was cursed with that thing about where English football was at the time, that if he played on the wing, he still had to put a shift in.
Mm.
And there was absolutely nothing remotely defensive about Anders Lippar, was there? He just got his head up, and he thought about going forward, and he never tracked back. He didn't do any of the ugly stuff, which, for me, I liked players like that. You know, I used to like players like Peter and Love, who'd go on amazing dribble and then just stand with their hands on their hips while the other team counter-attacked. And Lippar was kind of in that vein, wasn't he? He was kind of seen always, whether it was by George Graham, by Mike Walker at Everton, and even by Joe Royal, although Royal got him back into the team. He was always seen as that little bit of a luxury, wasn't he?
Yeah, that's right, that's right. Do you remember that goal he scored against Liverpool from practically the halfway line?
Incredible. Absolutely incredible. When I saw him score one at Upton Park, it was live on a Monday night. We were desperate for the points, as ever, to get out of a relegation scrap. We'd gone 2-1 up through Tony Cotty, and Lippar just cut in from the left, and he hit a shot that was like a cannon, thudded in off the crossbar. The Everton fans went wild, and they got a 2-2 draw, and he broke our hearts. But we stayed up that year, but I remember every time he got the ball that night, we were just, you know, we were fearful. He was that sort of player. When he was on song, he was absolutely tremendous to watch.
Yeah, you'd have thought he was a Brazilian player. That's how good he was back then.
He was, and he was kind of out of place. It's still every now and again. Well, mind you, we all wonder a little bit about George Graham's transfer dealings, don't we?
Yeah.
But he really wasn't a George Graham type of player. And it wasn't really a surprise when he ended up being put out of the club because Graham decided he wanted more hard workers, people, more grafters. But he really wasn't a George Graham player, but he helped him win the title in his first season. And he added that little bit of extra flair. But I suppose from George Graham's perspective, when you've got Paul Merson and Anders Lippar in the same first 11, there's not an awful lot of work right there, is there?
No. He had a decent World Cup in 94, though, didn't he?
He did. I'm trying to think who else was in that Sweden team. Where we saw Henrik Larsson and his dreadlocks, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. But wasn't it Thomas Brolin and Martin Dahlin? Who else? The goalkeeper, Thomas Ravelli? What was his name?
It was. He got about 193 caps.
Yeah, that's right.
And they had the most reliable right back in football history, Roland Nielsen.
Roland Nielsen, yeah. Klas Ingesson was there.
Oh, brilliant player.
Who else? Larsson was there, 100%. I'm pretty sure he was there.
I think he was the kind of new young thing that was bursting onto the scene with Sweden. He had dreadlocks.
Yeah.
And we had some great haircuts at that World Cup.
Yeah.
We also had, Valderrama was still knocking about.
He had
Baggio's ponytail still rocking that ponytail. It was a good World Cup for haircuts. I remember that one.
Here's a name for you, Kenneth Anderson.
Oh, the big lad.
Yeah.
The big lad. Yeah, he was a quality player. Yeah, that's right. So yeah, Lippar got the second. Arsenal Everton 2-0 to Arsenal. They went fourth in the league 25 years ago today. Fourth in the league for Arsenal. Everton just in free fall down to the bottom, towards the bottom of the table. How times change, eh?
Yeah.
if ever anything tells you that football is just one great big cycle, this is it. 25 years ago, Everton were poor up front, porous in defence, and couldn't win a game. Yep. There you go. All bad, Ronald.
And Arsenal ended up 10th that season. Everton ended 13th, and there was only 3 points separating them.
Yeah, Arsenal fell away again, and that was the sort of the beginning of the end for old George Graham and his magic hat, wasn't it?
That's right. Blimey.
Yeah. I've got, just before I go, still, got three 90s birthdays for you.
Go ahead.
One player that obviously I don't have an awful lot of love for, but you will. That's Paul Ince, who was 50 this week.
Oh, okay.
Ian Rush, 56, and then probably we just talked about some wingers there. Probably one of my all-time favourite English football wingers, Tony Arthur Daly, was 50 this
week. Tony Daly, wow, that's a name. That's a name, wow. Yeah,
what a player.
Yeah,
what a player.
He was. He
brilliant
was.
1 week, hopeless the next. But when he was on song, oh, he was magic. He was the sort of player I couldn't wait when the big match was on ITV on a Sunday and it was Villa. Mm. I couldn't wait to watch it because you knew when Tony Daly got the ball, he was going to try something and he was just going to burn down that flank. So happy birthday, Arthur Daly.
That's right, that's right. I remember him and Daly and Atkinson were absolutely frightening at Villa, weren't they, with their pace?
Yeah, fantastic. And I did a little, I was in a, as I always am, I was on a nostalgic trip through YouTube and I saw some of Tony Daly's goals at Villa, and he was magnificent, whether it was acrobatic volleys or mazy dribbles of 50 yards. Oh, what a player. Mm. I always wanted him at West Ham. He was fantastic.
Yeah. Sid, one day I'd really like to do a review of Dr. Josef Wenglosch's stint as Aston Villa manager.
Yeah, the man that time forgot.
That's right. I was like, weren't Aston Villa in Europe that one season that he was in head coach? I'm pretty sure they were in European competition that season.
Oh, that is a good one. That's one we'll have to revisit. Maybe we'll look at that next week. I remember Aston Villa in Europe very vividly because I remember Kent Nielsen scoring a goal in a tie against Inter Milan, I think it was. Was Joe Wenglos in charge for that one? Oh, leave it. I'll have to go and check the history books. You might be right.
Was this the game where Inter scored a goal and the ball went on the byline, but it actually crossed the line to go for a goal kick, and the referee said play on, and they scored from it? For some reason, I have this vision of Inter Milan scoring a goal from the byline. The ball's crossed from the byline, but it actually went out for a goal kick, but neither the linesman or the referee saw it. And they scored, and I think they won 3-0 in.
You're right. They did because they lost 2-0 at Villa, and I think they did win 3-0 in the return leg. But if you're suggesting that Italian footballers would cheat to gain an advantage, still,
no, I would never. I'm too professional for that, Sid.
Right, but I'm gonna make it. I'm gonna go back and I'm gonna look through the history books. Yeah, and I'll. We'll get the answer next week and see how Joe Wenglos is going to did in Europe. That's it.
Fingers crossed Ian Olney is part of that list.
Oh, the magic man. Yeah.
Great stuff. Well, Sid, before I let you go, would you like to give our listeners your Twitter handle and how they can get in contact with you or how they can find your work, where they can find
it? Absolutely. I'm on Twitter at Sid_Lambert, just posting lots of random 90s stuff, goals, games, outrageous haircuts. You know, Danny Dicchio features heavily in the latter.
Wow.
And then week by week, I'm doing a blog on 90sfootball.com. That's 90sfootball.com. We're going week by week through the 92-93 season, which is where it all began for the Premier League. The whole new ball game and all that. We're going week by week, reliving it as all the action went down. And it's a good fun nostalgia ride through what was probably the most exciting season in English football today.
Fantastic. Well, Sid, thank you ever so much for your time. Guys, if you're still listening, feel free to get in contact with us at Shoot the Defence or even tweet Sid and give us your memories of these games. And if you'd like us to discuss any specific game, we're happy to do this. And, you know, the 90s were very important to us, as they are for you. And, so we'll be back next week. Take care.